Rosner Olivas need no introduction in our base medrash. So all I'll say is this: I was very hesitant to ask to reach out to them to ask them to partake in this panel. They're both very busy with their shirim here in Yeshiva or in KBY, with their shul, Daf Yomi, etc., with postgame around the world. But I was amazed when I asked them. They both said yes within 2 seconds. It was really the excitement and the eagerness to share Torah was really unbelievable, and it was really inspiring for me. And I assume now that I shared it, it's inspiring to everyone else as well. So thank you so much for being so eager to join us here.
I was just eager to hang out with Rabbi Rosner a little bit. I miss him, so.
Yes, feelings are mutual, Baruch Hashem.
With that short hagdama, I guess I'll get right to the first question. Maybe we'll start with Rosner and then our Leibowitz, and we'll go from there. First question is, how should we view the secular Zionist leaders who helped form the state of Israel? Are they people who should be looked up to and praised? Should we have pictures of them on our good golden walls?
Okay, everybody could hear me. Let me know as long as the Wi-Fi is okay. We got a few in the house since the days of many Zooms in the house. So I hope Hashem this one will work. If I need to move, we'll move. But Hashem, siyata d'shmaya. First, Bereshis Rabbi Leibowitz, it's great to share Torah with all of you and with Rabbi Leibowitz. Probably the first time I'm giving shir with him since he took over there in his position in YU Smicha. It's really special for me to connect to YU Talmidim. I was on the YU campus for 20 years, from high school through college and Smicha and Kol Elyon and teaching. So really, YU has a very special place in my heart. And maybe as we'll talk about a little bit later, I didn't leave YU. I came to Eretz Yisrael. So it's a special place that I always have. And just also before we start to note, this is not a shir. It's a question answer, a little more Hamish and informal. So recognize that everything we say is not halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, and it's not structured and organized in the way of a shir or a psak. It's just food for thought and ideas that we could share in this forum that could hopefully get us thinking about these issues. So with that, and again, Bereshis Rabbi Leibowitz again, just a couple of thoughts. Again, some of the questions were shared with us beforehand, so I wrote down a couple of things. But again, hopefully there'll be time later to continue the conversations. And if anybody wants to email me or WhatsApp, Zev has the communication and the addresses. Feel free to join us. So the question was about the secular leaders, about the founding of the state. A couple of points. Number one. You can't go a Yom HaTzimut without mentioning the Eim HaBanim Smecha. Rav Teichtel discusses in his Sefer, he quotes from the Magen Meisharim, he quotes from the Beis Yosef, that why is it that the roots of David HaMelech were so murky? And if we think about David HaMelech, think we would think that the line and the lineage of David HaMelech would be pure, pristine, perfect. If somebody called you up and wanted to set David up with your daughter, what would be what? Let me tell me about his family. Okay, his great grandmother was a Moabite. He comes from Lot and his daughters Rus and Tamar. I'm sorry, Yehuda and Tamar, Rus and Boaz. Again, each of these could be explained l'shem shemayim in each of the cases. But why is this? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have it in this way? So again, there are many answers to the question, but one of the answers that the Beis Yosef writes, that the Eim HaBanim Smecha quotes, is that very often when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to share a great gift with the world, he Kabbalistically, he has to kind of cover it with unseemly covers in order to get it into the world. So that Midas HaDin doesn't say, oh, the world doesn't deserve it, Am Yisrael don't deserve it. So often we find that. He says that about David HaMelech, and then the Eim HaBanim Smecha says, and step one, that's what we might be able to say about the Zionists of the early 20th century. The earliest Zionists of this modern Zionism, the 1850s, with the Talmidei HaGra, but the more modern, so some of them we'll get to soon, were not supporters of Torah and mitzvos, but that doesn't take away the great matana and the great value of Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael. being that they were involved in it, because it connects to Koresh, the non-Jew helping build by Yesheni. It helps to a number of stories throughout the history, but this follows that line, number one. But then he says, number two, who says that we're ones to judge? Who says that these people who were Moser Nefesh, that helped create what we take for granted, Medina Yisrael, that they were anti certain things that we believe in, that's true, but we don't judge. It's not our place to judge. It's our place to recognize the Mesiris Nefesh and the commitment and the loyalty that they had to Eretz Yisrael, something that we could look up to in that regard. Not just Halomi Mikal Adam, but we could learn what it means to be to sacrifice for such a value, for such a country, for such a present of HaKadosh Baruch. This is besides the fact that many of the early Zionists, so to speak, were from just some of the more famous ones that were the leaders that set up the country weren't, but many of them were. So, number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses different means. Number two, there were many that were involved that were Torani. And number three, it's not our place to judge. What we can learn from them was that they had such a burning connection to Eretz Yisrael, something that we could admire and we could look at. So would we put them on the Gedolim wall? The question of the question, I don't think we have to put them on the Gedolim wall. But there are great people that we can learn from, that we don't call our rebellion, that we don't call our spiritual leaders in general, but there's so much to be involved with. And to say that there's anything negative about the country, about the land, because they were involved in it, that's something that we don't find that in history. Even just to mention that it's been quoted before, at least that some people say, you know, there were three things that are amazing institutions, but because there were certain people that were not Shomri Torah Mitzvahs connected to it, so for some reason, many of the Shomri Torah Mitzvahs have neglected it. Eretz Yisrael, Tanakh, and Lashon HaKodesh. Right? The Rambam says in Pirush Mishnayos, Lashon HaKodesh is something Hebrew, right? Not Ivrit, but at least Lashon HaKodesh. Learning Tanakh today in Eretz Yisrael is very popular to watch the Chidon Tanakh on the computer now. It's so very exciting. The whole family you watch, and but again, it's a center. You have the prime minister asking questions. You have this, everybody. It's like the center. But again, Tanakh, we have to learn Tanakh. We have to learn Kalat Arkula, but it starts with Tanakh. All the Rishonim knew Tanakh by heart. So, you know, just we have to make sure that we appreciate these three institutions. Specifically, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael and you know, the fact that certain of the leaders we're not Shomri Torah Mitzvos. I think based on these couple of thoughts, I think should not take away anything from how we feel about the realities and the miracles that took place at that time. I don't know if that was too short, too long, but either way, I'll pass it over to Rabbi Leibowitz.
Yeah, Shukoach. It was just right. I agree with obviously everything Rabbi Rosner said, and just Meirosh, I want to thank you guys for coming to join us and giving us an excuse to talk with each other. Obviously, when the topic is Eretz Yisrael, which the topic is today, to have me and Rabbi Rosner on the same panel, as absurd as that may sound in a normal setting, when we're talking about Avas Eretz Yisrael and we're talking about what Israel means to us and what Medinat Yisrael means to us, it is even all the more absurd to put us side by side. Haraya, one of us, dropped everything, a clear path to be a YU Rashi Yeshiva, a growing shul, and underrated for guys who yeshiva, you don't realize this. His wife is a doctor, you know, used to be a doctor in America versus a doctor in Israel, and dropped everything and made Aliyah. So obviously we're talking a different level of Avas Eretz Yisrael certainly the way that Avas Eretz Yisrael has been expressed through their own Mesiris Nefesh, and Baruch Hashem and Siyata Deshmaya, they've continued to be Matzliach in being Mashpia on so many people in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. even after the Aliyah, and if anything, the Hashpa has only grown even greater with great Siyata Deshmaya. Just to add a couple of Ha'aros on that question, you know, the Gemara in the 10th Parak of Pesachim talks about the Pasuk that we said this morning, for those who said Halal this morning. I just commented to my Shir today, nobody said Tachman this morning because it's Rav Shaila Karastir's Yartzeit. So no matter who you are, you're not saying Tachman this morning, but some of us said Hallel this morning. I assume everyone on this Zoom said some form of Hallel. So one of the psukim that we said was Evan Ma'asu Habonim Haisa L'Rosh Simcha, L'Rosh Pina rather, Haisa L'Rosh Pina. And the Gemara Darshan that this is an autobiographical point about David HaMelech. That David HaMelech was the Evan Ma'asu Habonim. He was the one that they all thought was going to be a nobody. But then Haisa L'Rosh Pina, he was the young one that was out with the animals and he wasn't going to be anything. And then he turned out to be the most important Jew that established the Malchus Beis David. And I think a friend of mine told me once that his Rav in Eretz Yisrael darshan that this is very true of the way the Medina was built. That which Ma'asu Habonim, Haisal Rosh Pina, meaning that there are two ways that the Medina has been built. The Medina has been built with a lot of Gashmius and with a lot of Ruchnius, meaning the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, the roads, the highways, the water, and then the buildings and everything else that you need, and a police force and an army and everything else that you need to run a country has been built. And also there's been a tremendous building of ruchnius in Eretz Yisrael, a tremendous building of Torah and tefillah. I was commenting to my shir earlier that there's an expression that I hear Talmidei Chacham use now when they talk about certain types of Talmidei Chacham. They say he's an Eretz Yisrael Dika Talmid Chacham, meaning like there's a different madrega, right? You ask a shayla to a rabbi in America, if he thinks he once heard there might be a shach that says something, ooh, what a Talmud Chacham, he heard that there might be a shach. You know, you ask a shayla to a Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, they'll tell you what Sif Katan and Prima Gadim it is. You know, it's a different, it's an Eretz Yisrael Dika Talmud Chacham. It's a different kind of level of achievement that we're seeing in Ruchnius in Eretz Yisrael. But it's ironic because each one was Moes in the other one, meaning those who achieved in Ruchnius for a good number of them were Moes in the Bonim and those who built the Gashmius of the land. They're not from, they're Apikorsim, they don't, and those who built the Gashmius of the land were Moes in the ones that were building the Ruchnius of the land. They're leeching off a society, they're not accomplishing anything, they're backwards, they're old-fashioned. But as it turns out, Evan Ma'asu Habonim, Haisa L'Rosh Pina, that which each one was Moes, it turned out we needed both of them to be L'Rosh Pina. We needed both of them to build up the Medina as it is. Now, as far as personally, how do we relate to the great Zionists that built up the Gashmiya side of things, that built a government in Eretz Yisrael, leaving aside those who were Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, as Rabbi Rasner referred to earlier? So as Rabbi Rasner mentioned, it's important to recognize accomplishments of people. But ultimately, you know, on the Gedolim wall behind me, you know, we're not going to hang up pictures of people who ultimately were not Shomrei Torah Mitzvos. Rav Schachter often points out that I forgot who he said. I think the former Rosh Shiva of Shalavim, I think he said, told him that he found a Ksav Yad from a Hasidish Rebbe from the early 1900s, where he said that, or maybe earlier, maybe even from the 1800s, that wrote in Parsha Shalach that the Meraglim accomplished so much. They were such great Talmidei Chachamim. They were great Tzaddikim. Anashim, right? Anashim Chashuvim. Yet, in their Avas Eretz Yisrael, they failed miserably. And because of that, their punishment was they were going to have to come down in a Gilgul Neshama, in a later generation, and not do any mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim, except for that one thing, to build Eretz Yisrael. So he said that they wanted to publish it, but they thought no one would believe it, that no one would believe that this Hasidish Rebbe even wrote such a thing. Shachter often points out that Gilgul Neshama is not one of the Karei Amunah. We don't have to believe that it's necessarily true. But he often points out that Ha'ara, that who knows, maybe that was their tafkid, that was their role to help push along Jewish history. But as B'nai Yeshiva, I do think it is important to orient ourselves in a way where, you know, do we have more in common with the Briska Rav, or do we have more in common with some of the great Zionist leaders? Obviously, we have more in common with the Briska Rav, and the Briska Rav was no Zionist, I can assure you. But we have more in common with the Briska Rav. It's his Torah that we learn every day. It's his, we have a similar aspiration for commitment to mitzvos and to Kirvas Elokim that governs the way we live our lives day in and day out. And at the same time, as always, we always try to recognize the accomplishments of others and be able, as Rabbi Razman said, it's more than Lomid Mikal Adam, but it's also Lomid Mikal Adam, that we should look at those who've accomplished wonderful things and learn a sense of Avas Eretz Yisrael from them. There are people that, Rabbanim, let's say, that maybe aren't great Talmidei Chacham, but a tremendous Ohavei Yisrael. So maybe every psak they give is wrong and every whatever, but so don't look at that to admire. Look at their Avas Yisrael to admire. You know, it's helpful to think positively and to look at what we can admire about different people.
And the next question, maybe we'll go a little out of order here, just because the stuff that already came up. But Rabbi Leibowitz already mentioned that Rabbi Rausner was on a Rosh Hashiva track here at YU. As Rabbi Berman likes to refer to it as a Rosh Hashiva track. And he had a very popular shul out in the five towns. Despite the successful trajectory here in America, what swayed Rebbe to ultimately make Aliyah? And for Rabbi Leibowitz, has Rebbe ever considered making Aliyah? And what considerations have gone into that factor? So maybe we'll switch up this time. Maybe Rabbi Leibowitz and then Rabbi Rausner.
Okay, I can answer both halves. Should I answer? This is, this is one of the things that's a great source of shame to me. I have this tremendous feeling of passion and love for Eretz Yisrael. I'm not a fool. I open my eyes and I see that the Ribono Shel Olam is so clearly handing us a gift. And, like Rav Shechter points out in a different context, when we talk about family planning, sometimes he says, if Hashem is willing to give you a gift, don't say no, thank you. You should be willing to accept the gift that the Ribono Shel Olam is willing to give us. And that's if a person doesn't think about it, you can't reassess your entire life every single day. That's unhealthy. Rav Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, said that in a different context when he spoke about co-education and how really the aspiration should be for single gender schools. But he said if every single day every co-ed school were to reassess their entire mission statement, that would be unhealthy. But every once in a while, he thought that they should reassess and think about where are we, and are we still filling a need for Klal Yisrael? And as the community moved to a point where now we should be doing things differently, and in our own lives we have to do the same thing. We have to reassess every once in a while. Yom HaTzmaut for me is a time of a lot of cheshbon nefesh. It's a time of reassessment. That and whenever an offer comes, whenever someone calls from Eretz Yisrael with an offer to be a street cleaner or whatever the different possibilities are, you always have to think about it seriously and have to think about the kind of impact that it has, but that it could potentially have on that Eretz Yisrael is having on Klal Yisrael and for the future of Klal Yisrael. One thing we know for sure, that the future of Klal Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael. There's no doubt about that. I was talking to a friend of mine just yesterday, and he was saying that his children have made Aliyah. And he said whenever he speaks to people of his generation whose children make Aliyah and they're upset about it, he says to them, I don't understand. Why were you paying day school tuition all those years? Meaning you could have said, you're going to tell me for the Torah, I'll give you a whole list of wonderful mostos that teach Torah even more intensely than the day schools you sent your children to. And they would have no desire to go to Eretz Yisrael. Weren't you paying for this? Isn't this worth the investment? You're paying for Doros in Eretz Yisrael. Eventually, we're all ending up there. This is a question of whether we get there ahead of the curve or behind the curve. So it's something that I think everybody, every religious Jew has to seriously consider and seriously think about and do a cheshbon nefesh. Again, not every single day, but from time to time.
So the question is personally about our journey. It was something that was always on our minds. I thought maybe right after Smicha, I would get there. I ended up marrying someone, going to medical school. So things were delayed. And then the Kol Elyon, you know, obligates time in Chutz Laaretz. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu had his hand in involvement. And, you know, one could look back on my Freya that my opportunities in Eretz Yisrael wouldn't have been the same had I not had the opportunities and the what I was able to do and be part of in Chutz Laaretz. But it was always something that we knew we wanted to do. Everybody has their own shikulim. Rabbi Leibowitz mentioned a street cleaner in Eretz Yisrael. I have some friends that that made Aliyah, and they wanted to do anything. Anything in Eretz Yisrael, they'll do. I didn't really have that. Maybe my Avas Eretz Yisrael isn't as strong as it should be. But you know, I felt that, you know, just personally, I wanted to be involved in Chinuch and Rabbanus in Eretz Yisrael. So if the opportunities presented themselves and I was able to do that, so then that would be something that we would look into. I spoke to many, many Rebbeim on both sides of the ocean. And there was no simple answer. My Rebbe, Moriv Rabbi Rav Rosenzweig, said, obviously he never says yes or no. He'll say, let me tell you about the issues. Let's talk about it. But he said, whatever your decision is, try to figure out a way to impact the other side. If you choose to go, then figure out a way to impact still in Chutz Laaretz. If you stay in Chutz Laaretz, figure out a way to impact. That was his very supportive of whatever the decision it would be. So it happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed certain opportunities to present themselves. 13 years ago, first I was in Reishit for 10 years, and now in Kerem Yavne and the shul in Beit Shemesh. So Siyata D'Shmaya, with a lot of Siyata D'Shmaya, this, we were able to come, Baruch Hashem, to an amazing community, amazing city. But in general, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, I think every single person has to think about it, you know, as one makes career choices, your years in YU, in terms of who you marry, in terms of, you know, what profession you go into. It's not a clear-cut decision. Again, maybe my children are upset when I say this, that everybody should come tomorrow. What are you talking about? But I understand that as one gets older, especially with families, it's not as simple. It's simple that we have to seriously consider it if it's possible. And I think over the past year, as you probably have heard, Nefesh B'Nefesh has had a tremendous spike in applications, in that people see one of the big issues was, oh, I can't, my job. 75% of the jobs are on Zoom now. So what's the difference if I do it here, if I do it there? So many, many more people are thinking about it now. But there's a line in the Trumas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen says, we have to figure out exactly where we could be the best Oved Hashem. And that is, we have to figure out exactly, again, we have to be honest with ourselves. And I will never, when we made Aliyah, you know, we told each other, I don't judge anybody. We don't judge anybody. Everybody has their own shikulim. Everybody has their own financial issues, family issues. Again, when one is single and younger, there's definitely less to think about. Even just, you know, those are in YU, when Talmidim say to me, should I go back to YU? Should I stay in Israel and you know, go to university here? It's not a clear-cut answer. Depends who the Talmud is. Depends the type of support system. Depends on, on a lot of different things. It's not always the right answer to stay, but it's not always the right answer to go back. You know, it depends on each situation. But it's something that we have to recognize is an opportunity. And Baruch Hashem, we were able to take part in it. It doesn't mean, you know, Rabbi Leibowitz is doing amazing things. And it's good to feel a little bit on Yom HaSmut. Yes, I agree with that. And one should always have that. But, you know, we need Rabbi Leibowitz is where Rabbi Leibowitz's are. And, you know, Rav Schechter, I think, has a footnote in that, the article he wrote in the RJJ many years ago, where he talks about that he spoke to Rav Avram Shapiro, the Rosh Hashiva in Merkaz Arab, who told him that if there are certain rabbinic figures that are accomplishing tremendous amounts in Chutz Laaretz, so then that's a responsibility. Now, the Lubavitcher Rebbe gave the mashal about the captain on the boat. The last one is on the boat is the captain. Again, I think it's clear, especially over the past couple of months and years, that there are things happening in America specifically that are pretty scary. That, you know, there's not comfortable for Am Yisrael. certain things. So we hope by Hashem, it's been an amazing couple hundred years that America has given. But we also know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pushing us back. So as much as we can get there, and if anybody's listening to this, I don't think any of you have children and grandchildren, but maybe people who are listening to this on YU Torah afterwards, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, support your children who are making Aliyah. Support your grandchildren. That's where the roots of the next generation are going to be. Be'ezus Hashem. And we have to do the best we can to try to beat the Mashiach rush. But it's a personal decision for each and every one. It's something that should be on one's mind. And the value has to be there, even if Lamaisa it doesn't happen right now. There are amazing, amazing communities in Chutz La'aretz. I say that right now, throughout the world, there are wonderful, amazing communities where they're built on Torah and Avod and Gemilas Chasadim. But Eretz Yisrael is the place, the center. And that's, Rabbi Yerucham once said, that the first thing Rosh Hashanah said in Shas, in the beginning of Maseches Brachos, the three gifts that were given to every Jew, Torah, Olam Haba, and Eretz Yisrael. And they're all nicknames B'Yisurin. And Rav Yerucham, Mashgiach and Mir said, why those put together? Because you can't be a complete Jew without any of those. You need all three. Olam Haba, Torah, and Eretz Yisrael. If we forget any of those, then we're missing a major point. So, B'ez Hashem, we should try to always do what we can to have it in the back of our mind. Again, sometimes, like even in my case, I thought I was coming right after YU, but then there was Kollel, and then I married somebody going to medical school. And at that stage, I wasn't going to say, if you find the right one, you say, this is the greatest value is Shalom Bayis, and that's something. If somebody tells me they're going to have to want to make Aliyah, but they're going to have to travel back and forth, that's not such a pushy decision. If it works for one family, works for one family. But Shalom Bayis is the greatest value. So again, every situation is unique and different. But again, it has to be something that we think about as much as we can. And Be'ez Hashem, if everybody comes, then we'll have YU in Israel too. Be'ez Hashem, we have YU in Israel, but in a dome. But Be'ez Hashem, hopefully one day.
Thank you. This is like a part two, kind of. A lot of Rabbanim say that one should stay in America if they can have a great impact on the Jewish community here in America. When one is just graduating college and planning for his life, how can one be aware if he can have a great impact on the American Jewish community? Is that a sense of kaiva, if that's what he thinks? Maybe we'll go backwards again. Rabbi Rosner, and then Rabbi Leibowitz.
Yeah, I think I don't really have much to add for that question. I think it's based on what we just spoke about, but also it's a little hard to think it's a broad, large terms. I think everybody, when they, let's say their average, graduate from YU went to study for a year or two in Israel, and then they're graduating YU, it's much more comfortable. And for somebody to think like, I'm going to have a great impact in Israel at that stage, it's very challenging to say that, in that Israeli society is a totally different society. There are a lot of B'nai Chutz La'aretz, so to speak, that grew up in Chutz La'aretz in Israel. I think it's hard to think in such big strokes of my impact in the world. I think one of you have to say, take the decisions that are in front of you. Take the decisions of what I want to do, how do I want to prepare to become the best Jew from the inside, and eventually to be mashpi on the outside. And one sees how things go. So to pick, to have it in mind, like I said before, to pick up a parnasa that I connect to, but that also could be transferable to Eretz Yisrael, in terms of finding a wife. And there's all these decisions. It's something that I don't think one could make that type of decision or acknowledgments before we even know what we're doing. I never thought, just as a personally, I never saw myself in the Rabbanus when I was in YU Smicha. I thought I was just going to be in Chinuch, and I wanted to teach, and I wanted to be involved in the yeshiva. And that's what I thought. Kodesh Baruch Hu had it, an opportunity presented itself a couple of years. We were in Borough Park the first 7 years after we were married. And then my wife was in medical school there. We had a couple of kids. And then we had to move out because our oldest was going into first grade. And there was not one Hebrew or English speaking school around. It was all Yiddish. Yiddish is wonderful, but we didn't know any. So we looked around, and the shul in Woodmere presented itself, Baruch Hashem, but I never saw myself down that path. And now, Siyata Shmaya, it's a wonderful gift that that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave. Yeah, but everybody has to know themselves. So I didn't even know that when I was in YU Smicha. I have certain good friends that are rabbis of major shuls throughout throughout America. I can never do what they're doing. Everybody has their talents, but often it doesn't happen and you don't know until things happen. So it's hard, Zev, to think about these major decisions, my impact. You have no idea what kind of impact we're going to have. We just have to become the best Jew, Talmid Chacham, Baal Chesed, the best that we could do, you know, every morning when we wake up. And then as time goes on, opportunities will present themselves and we'll have to make decisions, you know, as those opportunities come up. Hashem, we should have Siyata D'Shmaya in those decisions.
Yeah, I'll just add maybe one or two things. You know, I was talking to a couple of Talmidim yesterday, and it's interesting. There are two types of people. There are some people that already at a young age could tell you what their plans are for 20 years from now, where exactly they're going to be, what kind of impact they're going to make, what they're you know, what they're going to accomplish. And then there are people that, you know, one foot in front of the other. I'll see what I'm supposed to do today and what I'm supposed to do the next minute and the next hour without necessarily these grand visions of what exactly the impact's going to be. And I think it's different personality types. I know I certainly fit into the second personality type. It's hard to tell somebody who fits into the first personality type to stop it, you know, to stop thinking so big, because it's just the way they're wired a little bit. But I think it's generally, I'm aware of Rav Schechter's conversation with the Rashiv of Merkez Harav that Rav Rosner mentioned, and it was, Rav Schechter didn't write in the article, of course, that was advice to him, because Rav Shapiro told him he should make Aliyah, and he said, and he went to talk to him, and he said, tell me what you do when you're in America. So he said, well, I give a shiur here, and I give a shiur there, and I'm a Rebbe in YU. And he said, oh, you're doing so much, then you need to stay. So it was, so that was a conversation with Rav Schechter. I'm aware of that, but I'll quote something else that Moreno Rav Schechter Shlito often says, and that is that a lot of times people get the impression that either they or somebody else is irreplaceable. And there are very few irreplaceable people, meaning Klal Yisrael survives, communities survive, especially a large community will often survive with somebody else. Meaning Rav Schechter often comments, the cemetery is full of irreplaceable people, meaning ultimately everyone moves on and somehow Klal Yisrael survives. So for one to make that judgment about themselves without a Rebbe figure or mentor or someone who's unbiased making that judgment for you to say, look, what you have to offer is mamish irreplaceable, I think that would smack a little bit to me of gaiva for a person to make that judgment about themselves, you know, coming out of YU, you know, graduating YU now, and Klal Yisrael needs me here. I don't know. That would be a cause of concern for me if someone were to speak that way. Also, it's important to realize that the rules have changed a little bit in terms of impact. Barazza mentioned before about working on Zoom. I thought it was only Florida that everyone was running to. Apparently, they were running to Eretz Yisrael also. Baruch Hashem, happy to hear it. But the rules of how you can make an impact have changed, not just in work life, but how you can actually impact Klal Yisrael. Think about Rabbi Rosen for a second, right? I'm sure he's having a great impact in Eretz Yisrael, but the impact that we see from him is in America, meaning how many people that are listening to his Torah each and every day in America, thousands of people. I mentioned in a different Zoom recently that I was on with Rabbi Rosner that someone came over to me at a chasna and said, you know, with COVID, I don't have a commute anymore, so I decided to upgrade my learning. I said, oh, really? That's great. What did you do? He said, I stopped listening to your Daf Yomi and started listening to Rabbi Rosner's Daf Yomi. Okay, that's a good upgrade. So, at that level, or all the Talmidim from Keren B'Yavneh that are now that he sends back to yeshiva and have an impact on our yeshiva and have impact on communities in Chutz Laaretz when they come back. So it's a tremendous, and they're turning back to him to ask their questions and for hadracha and for guidance. So the it used to be you'd go on a boat, you'd go to a different continent, and you were never heard from again, and you didn't have an impact. Even already Rav Lichtenstein, there was no Zoom, there was no internet, there was no YU Torah, when Rav Lichtenstein went to Eretz Yisrael, he still managed to have a tremendous impact on American Jewry. And now, Kal v'chomer, you could have an impact in different ways. You just have to figure out how to possibly do that. And just one more point that Dean Wasserman messaged me just a moment ago. He said, the Tainus Chafalev, remember Rabbi Yochanan and Ilfa. Before Rabbi Razner made Aliyah, Rabbi Razner gave a now famous drasha about the two chavrusas that were learning together in yeshiva, and they thought it was time to go out and earn a living. And Rabbi Yochanan and Ilfa were traveling, and Rabbi Yochanan heard a voice that essentially indicated that he had to go back to yeshiva, that he was that it was not going to be good for him to leave the yeshiva. And he asked Ilfa, did you hear the voice? And Ilfa didn't hear anything. So Ilfa went out, and he earned a living, and he became Ilfa. And Rabbi Yochanan went back, and he became Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Razma spoke about the importance of hearing the voice, that sometimes there's a calling, and if you listen to that voice that's telling you what your destiny is, you know, Ilfa could have heard it, but he wasn't attuned to it. He wasn't listening to hear the calling of what was meant for him. I always think about that Gemara. Certainly, every time Daf Yomi hits Tainus Chaf Aleph, I always think about this because I'm the Chavrusa. I'm the one that didn't hear the voice. So it's always a cause of great introspection in terms of that. But don't underestimate the impact. The impact that you could have. And you know, I think there's a difference between thinking that you're irreplaceable versus thinking that you just don't have a path toward productivity. I mean, if you don't feel that there's some way that you're going to be able to be productive and live and contribute anything in our, so that's a different story, meaning whatever field you might be in or whatever, you know, but to deem oneself irreplaceable, I think that requires someone else to make that judgment for you.
Thank you. There are those who say that in Israel, the scuffles are more polarized than they are in America. Can the Rebbeim speak to the challenges of the why you guys feel when they think that they don't fit into one of these scuffles in Israel? I guess we'll do the same. I'll leave it to Rabbi Razner.
Rabbi Razner is much more qualified because he's actually there. I would just make one little ha'ar over here. I'm really short over here. And that is that I think we often mischaracterize this. People say it's more polarized because you're either super Haredi or you're so modern that like we don't even recognize your orthodoxy. That's not really true. There are lots of shades of gray in Eretz Yisrael also. The shades of gray are just different shades than the ones in America. You know, meaning the values of those who are in the middle, you know, maybe they, you know, there is no parallel to YU. Meaning there are those that value Talmud Torah a lot more than maybe our community does. And there are those that value Talmud Torah a lot less. But those same ones that value Talmud Torah more may have other values that are, it just doesn't align. It doesn't fit perfectly because we're two different societies and two different continents. So it doesn't, until another niche of society is created, which has happened and has begun to happen and continues to happen, it's just not going to align perfectly. So it's not going to fit 100%. And that's where it's challenging to sort of figure out where you fit. Do you, you know, where in which shade of gray a person actually fits? Meaning, I have a cousin who lives in Rehovot who called me up about his son maybe coming to the United States for summer camp. So he's a modern Orthodox guy from what I can tell, you know, Hesder all the way and everything like that. And so he asked me which camps are a good idea for his son. So I said Camp Keli, of course, but he can't make it here in time for Camp Keli to start. And then I said, oh no, he's an Israeli kid. And I said, Moshava. He said, but that's co-ed. And I was like, okay. I mean, I thought like, that's sort of where you are. I didn't say that, but that's like out of the question for him. It's not even a shaila. Meaning there's modern and there's, I mean, it's just a different set of values. And that's where the challenge I think comes up most often. And, but ultimately that's a one generation challenge from what I'm able to tell. The kids find where they believe that they fit, and they fit exactly. Meaning they figure out a way to. Rabbi Razner can speak to this more than I can, so I'll just be quiet now. Let him talk.
The first of all, if one feels that there's not enough people like them in Eretz Yisrael, so that means you need to come. Because the more people that are, so to speak, gray, YU, there's not enough YU from YU, whatever it is. The more people that come, the more people that will be like you in whichever community one goes to. But as Rabbi Leibowitz referred to, on the one hand, yes, one might think people, there's less what we might call gray, but a major reason for that or siman for that is the army plays a major role, because when one is in school, one has to pick an institution where what's going to be afterwards. You know, there's not as much flexibility in terms of that. But it's a challenge. One has to figure out exactly when one comes to Eretz Yisrael to figure out exactly which institutions and which what they're going to be connected to. But one it's an important detail. But one has to see the bigger picture of the values that one gains in Eretz Yisrael. And I've spoken about this in the summer in the past when we've done some of these symposiums. But I just say personally, let's say my children gain a certain connection to Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael through their high school experience, specifically that I don't have. This feeling of achrayus, this feeling of connection to the Am, that I need to live my life as part of Am Yisrael, as connected to Eretz Yisrael, that they can't fathom after high school not giving a certain amount of time for your country. And they're looking at friends, and it's like funny thing, you have to be finished college by 22, and you have to be this. It's like my son is Shir Zion in Yerucham, and he's starting to figure out exactly, what's happening. And but again, there's a certain connection, there's a certain intense responsibility of being an Eved Hashem connected to the Am and connected to the Aretz. How do we, as I grew up in America, how do we measure Avodas Hashem? How do we measure values? So on the outside, we might see, black and white more and less gray. It's hard. I say personally, it's hard for us to, let's say, you look into the Beis Medrash sometimes in an Israeli yeshiva, you see that the one of the biggest lamdanim in the yeshiva is wearing a t-shirt and jeans. And it's like hard for us to, because we're not used to that. But how do we measure things? So are there issues that come up? 100%. But are there, if one looks on it overall, being in a country that gives these values, if one connects in the right way, it's something that's very special. Once anyone's gave the mashal, in Israel, you're playing the game, you're not on the sidelines, right? You're not watching the game. It's playing the game. Over the past year and a half, I think Rahman al-Utslan, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael and Jews in Chutz La'aretz have been made to be separated because of the realities that have been. If you listen, Rabbi Reisman gave an amazing shiur. It was on last Tisha B'Av about the doors closing and which side of the door one has to be on, what one is on. But it's, there are challenges whatever one is. Some people say that I don't know where I'm going to educate my kids. That's an issue, but it's not an issue. That's an issue that has to be dealt with. And, one has to figure out exactly where and what. There are issues in education in Chutz La'aretz also. Nothing is perfect. But we do our best. And, like I said, the more Jews that come, the more like-minded Jews that come, we could expand the borders of different communities. But it's like we said, it's growing pains. And there's certain things that are blossoming now that Beth Hashem, we hope that they continue to blossom.
On that last point, then we'll go for another question on that. How should one approach the consideration of sending a son to the Israeli army? What are the various factors that one should think about in this choice?
I think the formulation of the question is a little nobody sends their son to the Israeli army. If there is a son that chooses, that expresses interest, a parent doesn't have that and shouldn't parents should not make the decision one way or the other about sending anything. I grew up in America and I studied in Eretz Yisrael. It was never a havamina for me. Let's say as a, you know, ben chutzpah Eretz, you know, now it's a little more common, I think, you know, to do machal or to do, to make aliyah, do hesder. It was never a havamina for me, even though I grew up in a very, you know, Zionistic home, even though I davened in a shtiebel growing up in Far Rockaway. But, you know, all of us, I was the fourth of the four children in my family to make aliyah, and then my parents came. But it was never a havamina. So if somebody, for a parent from Chutz La'aretz to try to live their dreams by sending their son and saying, I hope you, you know, it doesn't usually work in this direction, but, you know, I hope you draft, you know, that shouldn't be done. And if a child expresses, I think that's more of the question, right? If a child, if a boy, if a son comes and expresses interest and a ratzon to join Tzahal, you know, what should be the parent's reaction? So again, there has to be tremendous support, tremendous, you know, just making sure, obviously, you know, supportive once the decision is made. As the decision is being made, you know, I think one has to, you know, work out all the issues and you know, talk it through. Obviously, it's I think for a parent in Chutz La'aretz, probably scary is probably the word that would be used. I could just tell you, as a parent of two sons that are my oldest son and my other son now today, he's guarding in the southern Hebron Hills this week, to Tzanchanim. The feeling that I have, Kadosh Baruch Hu should watch over everybody, is not nervousness. Kadosh Baruch Hu needs to protect all Jews everywhere. It's pride. It's pride that after 2,000 years, we could have Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael defending themselves with a Kadosh Baruch Hu's help. And there was never, it's when you see your son in a uniform, when you see anyone, it's not just when you live here, it's a little different. It's not just a average American teenager that comes and thinks it's cool to see their friend with a big gun and let's take a picture, you know, Rahmana Litzlan. That's not what it is. It's serious, but it's a feeling of belonging. It's a feeling of we're doing, this is, you know, you see somebody like my son, my older son, when he was on the Gaza border for 7 months. So he started, that was when Daf Yomi was learning Sanhedrin. What was that? A bunch of years ago. So they started Daf Yomi together. I mean, this is the, you know, they have big pockets in their pants to keep soft, little soft covered gemaras in. Again, there are ways, Baruch Hashem, to be in the army, that's your ruchnius, Be'ez Hashem, will be strong and continue. Are there challenges? 100%. I think it's very important to go into to the army in a context with Hezder is an amazing context, and you know, with friends, with support systems. Again, is it hard? Is it challenging? Yes. Should parents push their kids to do it? No. From Chutz La'aretz, we're not going talking about Eretz Yisrael now. We're talking about what's more shaykh to the audience here. But again, if a child expresses interest and wants to, it's a tremendous chus to protect Am Yisrael, to protect Medinat Yisrael. Just yesterday, there's probably, you can find a story online. It's a famous story with Rav Gusman and Dr. Who's the Nobel laureate?
Alman.
All right, Dr. Alman, where he was paying a shiva call. Dr. Alman lost a son, Rahman al-Islan, in one of the wars. And Rav Gusman came and was crying for him. He's like, what? With the Rosh Yeshiva, Kuntrasei Shiurim. Says, Rebbe, he seemed very upset. He says, I'm very upset, but I'm Makana a little bit. So, are you Makana me? You're the Rosh Yeshiva. He says, I also lost a son, but I lost a son meaningless. They were just a bunch of hoodlums, you know, took him. Your son died al Kiddush Hashem, you know, defending Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. You don't get higher than that. And they cried together. But again, to be able to be parts, again, Rahman al-Islam, there's so much today. Rav Gorin has an amazing biography. Again, you might not agree with everything that Rav Gorin said and did, but what he created for the state, he was the one that said, you only have one army, you can't have two armies. So the army has to be kosher. Every army base has a base medrash. The army was eating, my son was eating matzah for the week before Pesach. There was no challah, there was no bread in the whole base. So, okay, we had the minhag of not eating for Rosh Chodesh. Okay, what could you do? But see, matzah for the week before Pesach. because this is our army. This is the reality. We daven for the day that we don't need it, but it's something that, you know, one has to recognize the value, the tremendous schus that it is. That's what these boys feel. A schus to serve, a privilege to serve. If somebody expresses that, a Ben Futzlaris wants to join, amazing, with tremendous support. Again, it's nervous, but again, should they be pushed to? No, I don't push Talmidim to. If Talmidim express a ratzon and something that they want to do, I will support it. I will facilitate everything I can. I'll talk through the issues, but do I push my Talmidim to do it? Again, maybe I don't push enough. Maybe some people will say I don't push enough. Some people say I should try to convince them not. I like to say if it's Chanoch, if there's a Talmud that expresses, that wants it, then obviously supportive. If somebody not, they didn't grow up thinking about it throughout their high school career and all the, you know, then I think it's something that's not for everyone who did not grow up with that mentality. Again, this is some of the issues. I don't know if I answered the question, but hopefully.
Yeah, I would agree with pretty much everything Rabbi Rosner said. I mean, definitely everything Rabbi Rosner said, and he obviously knows a lot better as a parent of soldiers. From an American perspective, when a child goes to learn in Eretz Yisrael, and after 2 years of yeshiva or a year and a half, he says, I want to go to the army. So obviously he needs guidance. There are dangers and there are benefits, and he needs to talk to his rebbeim, and he needs to talk to his parents, and they need to be able to see what's motivating it. Is it a tremendous passion to defend Am Yisrael, in which case he's doing, either way, he would be doing this very, very great mitzvah. Sometimes a kid is restless and he just is having a hard time in learning and he's embarrassed to come back to Chutz Laaretz early. So he'd rather enroll. That would be terrible. That would not be the reason to go to the army. You have to really look at each situation for what it is. Obviously, the way you're supposed to raise your children in general is you hopefully raise them with the right values. And hopefully they'll know what to seek Eitza on. And when they take into account all of the Eitza that they receive, they will then be equipped to make their own decisions. And that's what it is. It's that they're Bali Bechira, and they'll ultimately make, hopefully, mature decisions. And once that decision is made, then there's no doubt. Once the decision is made, every parent, and I can't imagine a parent who doesn't do this, b'lev v'nefesh, supports their child who's defending Am Yisrael. How could you not? I mean, once that decision is made, and once they're there, whether you would have advised it or not, I mean, they're doing this great mitzvah. They're heroes of the Jewish people. And at the very least, what the rest of us owe our chayalim is to daven for them each and every day. Whether it's through the tefillah for the chayalei tzal that they say at some shuls and don't say at other shuls, or just your own private tefillahs that every parent who's sending a child, who's seeing a child go off into the army should have the comfort of knowing that Klal Yisrael is davening for their child, that Klal Yisrael is davening for the safety and the well-being of their child. I think in our shuls we have to do a better job at the tefillah for the chayalei tzal, because even the shuls that we say it, is it said with passion? Is it said with feeling? Is it said in a way that causes introspection and that causes people to really be davening? Is it a moment of tefillah, or is it just like a political statement? Yes, we are a Zionistic shul. You know, I think we all have that responsibility to daven for those who help us and defend us.
And just to add one more sentence, what Rabbi Leibowitz just said. I've said before, I think one major step to bringing Mashiach is if one Shabbos, every single shul in the entire world says the tefillah for the chayalim. I want to say the Avinu Shebeh Shamayim has certain political connotations, whatever, certain lines in it that people are uncomfortable with. But what are you uncomfortable with for davening for the chayalim, davening for the tzava? So that would be a huge step in bringing Mashiach of Achdus Am Yisrael, if every single minion in the entire world, one Shabbos, would say that the Misha Be'er for the Chayalim. So, one shul by one shul, one by one. Be'ez Hashem.
This is going to be the last question. Also, just to clarify for everyone, the questions are not mine. Any assumptions are not mine. I just took them from different B'nai Yeshiva who sent them in, just to get that out there. But, so the last question is, how is a Jew ideally supposed to celebrate Yom HaTzmut? I guess I forgot who went last time.
I went last. Okay, so, well, I mean, we sort of Okay, I'll go. First of all, Zev, the questions were great. You don't have to apologize for the questions. There's nothing wrong with the questions. Yasher koach, everyone, for submitting such great questions and promoting this discussion. I know I certainly learned a lot from Rav Rosner Shlita over the course of the past hour. Yom Ha'atzmaut is tricky because, we don't have mitzvos hayom in the classical sense, meaning usually we have Chazal or the Torah itself to guide us in exactly how to celebrate. So here we have a day that we know has to be a Yom Tov. It's just too big not to be. It's a day that has to be a day of great celebration, but we don't have, there's no Kriyas HaMegillah. We don't have, and it feels that when, people make up a tekes, they make up a program, it just doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel right, especially since it's not adopted by all of Klal Yisrael, and you can go to five different shuls and they do five different things. So that's one of the challenges of Yom Ha'atzmaut. And as a result of that, I think sometimes people maybe don't take it as seriously as they should. We should realize, and this is the Ikar, we should realize what we're dealing with over here. We're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us something of such historical significance that, for centuries, Jews could not have even imagined such a gift like HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us in our lifetimes. The very fact that for the last year, it was the first time in any of our lives that the doors of Eretz Yisrael were practically closed to us and that we couldn't get in. But pretty much for the rest of our lives and going forward, Be'ez Hashem, for the rest of our lives, whenever we want, we could just, a Jew can go to Eretz Yisrael and can sit down in a yeshiva and learn and can go daven and can, the very fact and the fact that we have what we have should cause your neshama to sing and dance. I mean, there should be a sense of tremendous, tremendous joy over the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us such a gift. It should cause not just introspection, but tremendously positive emotion toward the Ribbono Shel Olam. The trick is how to express that exactly. And for that, we're sort of stuck because we have to just, each person has to follow the guidance of their own Rebbeim and what their own Rebbeim say is appropriate. And sometimes we even get mixed messages from our own rebbeim, but make sure that you have moments at least, or you have. I know in my family, when my kids were growing up, so we didn't always send them to yeshivas that necessarily celebrated Yom Ha'atzmaut, at least not for elementary school. So every Yom Ha'atzmaut, we went out for dinner. Is that a thing that you go out for dinner for Yom Ha'atzmaut to the local Israeli restaurant that has shawarma? I mean, is that that's not a thing? That's not. But you have to recognize that it's Yom Ha'atzmaut, that it's special, that it's something that they're gonna get excited for. So at the very least, the emotional side, we have to experience, even though I acknowledge the lack of direction that we have on the practical side of the celebration, on the ritualistic side. I'll leave the rest to Erasm.
It's just similar, a similar point. We get often caught up in, especially, I would say, I lived in Fitzlaris for many decades. We get caught up in details. Say halal, don't say halal, with a bracha, without a bracha. Oh, halal and tachnun, halal that time. Whoa, after Shmona Esrei, later. We get caught up to so many details, and that's chaval, because we have to recognize first and foremost the tremendous miracle that took place. To recognize Kibbutz Golias, just the fact that in the 1850s when the Talmidei Agra started coming, there were 6,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael. 1948, there were 600,000. Today, there's 6 million. In 73 years, they went from 600,000 to 6 million. Just that detail, not a detail, but just that concept of 6 million Jews, that this Shemitah is going to be more of a Shaila because it could be that rove Jews live in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, that's unfathomable if we think about it, right? The fact that you could walk the streets and see nevuos, see prophecies, coming to you, see elderly grandmothers and grandfathers and kids playing. You see Mama Zacharia. You see the Gemara in Maseches Matos. Right? You see that, right? The Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin about that. Rabbi Abba says that until the Jews come back, things aren't going to grow. They're not going to grow. What kind of Nevuah is that? Thousands of years ago. And it happens, right? Mark Twain, famous letter. Right, he comes in the mid 1800s. There's no more desolate place than Palestine, and nothing grows here, and it's impossible. And yet, You know, what happens? You know, look around, look at every tree that's planted. Look at in the middle of right by communities next to Gaza. They're growing things in the sand. We can't even understand how that works. But it's kiyum chalomos, especially, you know, none of us were there. But 4 years after the largest human tragedy in the history of the world, and then four years later, it's something like, again, and it's I think a little it's more intense living here, obviously. But going from Yom HaShoah to Yom HaTzmaut the following week, you really feel, you know, the magic and the fact that it doesn't make any sense. All right, Rav Yaakov Emden once said, the greatest miracle in the history of the world is not Kriyas Yamsuf, is not the walls of Yericho falling down. And this is Rav Yaakov Emden a couple hundred years ago. He writes, this is not dumb, it's the Beis Yaakov in the Siddur, is that we're still around. That the Jews, every single generation, they try to get rid of us. Every single generation. Remember a couple of years ago, I was in England doing interviews, and I asked one of my Talmidim to take me to the British Museum. It was Parshas Bo. It was Friday, Parshas Bo. So we went to the British Museum, which has everything, and we went into the Egyptian room. And you see the pharaohs and the mummies, and you see the whole thing. I remember remarking to the one of Talmidim, I said, you see any Assyrians here? You see any, like, ancient Egyptians or Romans or Greeks? Where are they all? Where are all of these? And the only one, the Hebrews. The Hebrews are still here. The Hebrews are still around. It's the greatest miracle in the history of the world. And he said that 200 years ago. So it's 4 years after the Holocaust, 3 years after the Holocaust, to have such a miracle. So the details, Hallel, Noel, Bracha, we can't lose sight of the fact of what it is and what it means to us, and the recognition that we have to, and that doesn't matter. This is not a political statement. This is something that every Jew has to feel. And if they deny and they say, you know, something, somebody said to me today, a little tongue in cheek, but he said that, and he's a very big, you know, Zionistic believer. He says, Vayol Moshe, I agree with him in one aspect. What aspect? He says, he agrees that something major happened in 1948. Okay, he reads it the exact opposite way that all of the other gdolim of the time. It was an onesh, but he agreed. How could one not recognize? There's more Jews. There's more Torah learning going on today than in the history of Am Yisrael. That's all from the fact that there was 1948. That some of the nations acknowledged a kiyum of the nevuah of what Yeshayahu Navi said that in the future. So. Again, let's not get caught up in the details. And again, in Chutz La'aretz, it's much easier to get caught up in the details because you don't feel it as much. You're not living it as much. But every single person, especially those of, you know, Baruch Hashem, you know, we live in a, you know, our community generally has, you know, you get to learn in Eretz Yisrael for a year or two or three, and you're able to be part of an institution, Yeshiva University, that is openly, tremendously supportive. Eretz Yisrael, Israel is the real center of the Jewish future. But the Jewish future at YU believes that. So one has to recognize that is the ikr, the chi of hoda. How one does that, and again, like Leibowitz mentioned, we don't need anybody. Just look at how Rav Schechter davens, and every time he talks about Eretz Yisrael, just that itself is the greatest message that you know, he can't get through Yerushalayim Erecha without crying, because he feels it and he knows it. And this is, you know, one of the Rebbeim, our Rosh Yeshiva, and all the Rebbeim that we look up to. These are the values that we have been given. And we can't get blinded by political statements, by things that people say, or we have to recognize the miracle, how we express it. Okay, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, one could ask the Rebbeim, but we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have a little extra kavan in modim. And just to mention maybe two other quick thoughts, quick one-liners that you could have in your back pocket. It's two varts on benching. So if you ever have to give a Dvar Torah, you know, it's fine. You can go any meal that you ever have to give, right? The number one, if you look in they put out the Rav's Birchon, the Rav in Boston put out the Rav's Birchon. So if you look there, he talks about Eretz Chemda Tova Rechava. What does it mean, Eretz Chemda, that Eretz Yisrael is a Chemda, desirous? Where do you have that Lashon? So you have it by Adam and Chava. The tree was Nechmad Lamara. it was desirous. So the Rav there, it writes a beautiful lashon. There was some type of magnetic pull that the tree had, and Chava couldn't hold herself back. She couldn't not eat from the tree. It was nechmad. There was a chemda there. Says the Rav, the Jewish people have a chemda to Eretz Yisrael. There's some type of illogical magnetic pull. There's nothing like it in the annals of history that a people 2,000 years after being dispersed from their land will daven to come back every day. And we'll come back. We'll come back 2,000 years later to come back to a homeland. It's never happened before because that's Eretz Chemda Torah Chava. When we bench, we can think about that. That we have to, if it's not in us, we have to develop that magnetic connection that we have to Eretz Yisrael. And related to that is one thought from the Beis Yaakov, not the Beis Yaakov of Rebecca Melissa, but the Beis Yaakov, he's the son of the Meah Shiloh, the Ishbitzer. So he says, so interesting, the first bracha of benching is said in third person. Who knows in lechem l'chol basar? Uvetuvo ha'gadol tamil lo chasar lanu. It's all he. And all of a sudden we get to no delacha. We're talking directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'al shen chal tov, v'al brischa shach sandim v'sarein, v'al torascha. He lived in Ishbitz. Right, so what's the message? Why did it switch from third to first? So he says, who wrote the first bracha of benching? Moshe Rabbeinu at the Mon. Who wrote the second bracha of benching? Yeshua ben Nun, who went into Eretz Yisrael. When they crossed the Yarden, no delcha Eretz Chemda Tova Rechava. As great as Moshe Rabbeinu was, and he was the greatest Jew and human being, he got closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a certain directness and closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that one could only get in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why Yeshua ben Nun, even though Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously, but there was a certain element, certain direct hashgacha that only exists in Eretz Yisrael that Moshe Rabbeinu desired. But that is why we switch in the benching, brischa, and we go straight. So Yehi Ratzon, we recognize the day as a day that of a turning point in history. We recognize the day as a special day to give hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we dive into the day that that everybody has that zochet to that special connection, direct hashkacha, eretz chemda tova rechava, and we have to do all we can to stay connected. One of the questions that we didn't get to is what could a Jew in Chutz Laaretz do to stay connected? Well, you know, as much as one could do now with videos, there are so many great things online. You know, we have to learn about it, obviously, learn about Eretz Yisrael and stay connected, but just watch things that go on. Watch things that go on. There's so many ways that visually that we can be connected besides vacationing there, supporting your children and grandchildren that move there. But it's we have to make sure we do our best to, as you know, it's the challenges of not being there, but it's good to feel bad that you're not there. And it's good to feel, you know, I wish I could be there right now. That's a good feeling. You know, when we lose that feeling, then we have to start worrying. But Be'ez Hashem, we should be a zochet to have all Jews always have that feeling, and not just have the feeling, to be able to join Achenu B'nai Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, B'mehera V'yameinu. Thank you, Zev, for arranging everything. Rabbi Leibowitz, is always a kavod to be able to share the podium with you. And we should go mechayel chayel. Do you have time for any questions, or we should end? I don't know what it's getting late here in Eretz Yisrael. We haven't figured out the time gap, but.
I was going to call it here. I've told you 45 minutes or 25 minutes over, so I feel bad about that. If anybody wants to stay, I mean, whatever.
Maybe one question. Just, if not, if the guys, people could, just WhatsApp me or email me, or come to Camp Kaylee and visit if Mashiach should come before then. But Be'ez Hashem, if it works out, you know, we should be there too. But, okay.
We'll call it here. But Chag Sameach, everyone. Really, thank you so much to Rabbi Leibowitz and Rosner for the eagerness to come and join us on this panel. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a